I'm torn by the tragedy of seeing great people pass. Kind of make me sort of wonder. I mean, it kind of makes us feel that it's our turn next, you know, because a lot of people who left town are people whom we knew. I look at many people like Stokely Carmichael, of course, Kwame Ture, and having known him and so on, it's touched me, and I just, looking at something earlier, saw his name again, and it just kind of reminded me about that there isn't much left for those of us who were around in the 60s, you know, with people like that. People like John Henry Clark, another personal friend who, you know, took so much with him. And many of the other figures who we looked at, many entertainers and, you know, other people who made great contributions. And, you know, I'm ending with this sense of great loss, but I'm also ending in a tone of not only pondering and reflecting on these things, but being genuinely concerned.
Hello out there in Radio Land, wherever you are on this day. I hope you're safe and sound and healthy and ready to pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday, when the world seemed reasonably well-ordered, despite all the struggles that we had. But something occurred last night that has changed for us here at WBAI, our own little world, and that is the passing of our program director, Samori Marksman. And so on this day, Tuesday, March the 23rd, 1999, we are all here to remember him and to pay tribute to this glorious person who held us all together and who symbolized the best of WBAI through his leadership, his compassion, his camaraderie, his consideration, and his vision, and his dedication to community. And between now and the 6 o'clock hour, we will be talking from our hearts about this great man, Samori Marksman, and how he has touched each of our lives. And it is in that spirit that I introduce perhaps the eldest among us, and he has the privilege of starting us off today in this day of remembrance, and that is Al Lewis.
I am reminded of something that I read about 3 or 4 days after the event that a reporter came to Henry David Thoreau and said to him, now that John Brown is dead, what will happen? And Henry David Thoreau said, "You were wrong, young man. John Brown is not dead. If we don't carry on, we are the ones who are dead." And that struck me this morning. I didn't hear the announcement. My wife called me from her office crying and told me what had happened, what she had heard. About Samori, the person, the man. Program director is like putting a label on a box. He's a Democrat, a Republican, a liberal, a progressive, a conservative, a radical. That didn't describe to me Samori Marksman. There's an old word that's not used anymore. It was used around the turn of the century, and it's a word, our Nesta has fallen. I know it'll send a lot of you to your dictionaries. And it means our leader. And even that is not the sum total of what it is. Samori asked me to do a show on BAI. He encouraged me to do a show. And he knew that I could be very vituperative, very in your face, but he enjoyed mostly the passion of my belief. And that is what exemplified Samoria. My youngest son teaches at the University of Kentucky, and he once told me he teaches philosophy in Latin and a couple of other languages. And he said to me, "Dad, do you know the origin of the word passion?" And I said, "No." And he said, "That emanated from the suffering of Jesus on the cross." And Samori, in his brilliant work here at WBAI, carried an enormous burden of suffering. Maybe it was too much. I don't know. I cried out my tears this morning. I probably still have a few left. As a performer, I'm trying to hold to a composure. Very difficult. If I were to say any more, I would say Samori Marksman is dead. We, individually, collectively, together, must pick up the mantle, the burden, and carry it forward. And I'd like to close by saying, Samori had a wife and three children. We're trying to set up something. I would like those of you who can, to send me, Al Lewis, at 120 Wall Street, WBAI, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. Whatever you can, and earmark it for Rita Marksman and children. And in a very short time, we're going to set something up in the bank. That's what we can do for the family. For you, the listeners, and the station. Remember what Thoreau said. If we don't carry on the struggle that Samori did so passionately. And I'm reminded, just a couple of days ago, I played this a number of times on my show, and at home I've heard it 20 times. Clayton Jones' speech. Samori, you never were a Negro trustee. God bless you.
Thank you, Al Lewis. Peter Beauchamp, we began this program with a montage that you put together. We heard the voice of our fallen leader starting out this program. Your thoughts about Samori Marksman?
Well, I'm just still shocked. I mean, I tuned in just by chance and heard Al on what was supposed to be the music program, and that Samori is gone is just, it's hard for me to grasp, because he's always been the one who says what's happening next. We just picked up some CDs from Paul sitting over here for the 50th anniversary, and supposed to have a meeting with Samori, but of course he's backed up like usual doing four or five people's work, and says, "You know what to do. You know what to do with it, just like Paul Robeson, whatever, just do it." And that's how coming from Samori, it was always, even though he's the same age as me, it was like a father figure saying, "You can do it, you're the, you know," whatever he said, that meant so much to me. It was like part of, it would keep me in line, not getting too silly or stupid on the air, knowing that Samori's listening somewhere, and he's going to say, oh, back to playing the Beach Boys or Elvis Presley. Come on, we have an agenda here. And it was Samori's presence that was doing that, like coming out of the, if I felt I hadn't done a good show, I might avoid Samori on the way out. Because, you know, I don't know. I just, him talking like that was just at the year-end reviewer. I go around, ask him, and that was really heartfelt. He really felt these things that he'd come in without any notes or something and then just look at a list of what had happened and start putting together in a very personal and articulate way. The most, of everybody I know, he was the most read, you know, the most learned. You walk into his office here, you look at the stack of books that go up to the ceiling, and Samori's like looked at all of them. I don't know, when I first met him, must have been 20. When did Samori first get here? That's when I first met him. And, you know, I can't believe he's gone, really. That's how I feel. I can't grasp it. I hear you all saying it. But, and the whole day's going to leave, because he worked all hours, all night. You know, he'd be here on the weekends. You'd come in, and there'd be Samori in his office going over this bit of tape for, especially when any membership drive was approaching or even months away. Samori's already thinking about how to go forward, and also the pressures from Pacifica. And Samori was like that door between us and them. I mean, he was the guy. He was the man. And maybe that's what you're referring to, Al, when you're talking about everybody standing up here. But this is his second term. There's not many people who come back for a second dose of being the program director at BAI, because it usually wears people out. It wears them out, hurts them. And Samori came, you know, he came back because the station, what he believed was the essence of BAI, needed somebody to take control, and he did it. And this was longer than the first time. But he never left the station. He was still doing his program. He was always here. And I just can't believe it. I mean, I walked by yesterday. I didn't walk in there and say something to him. I'm going to miss him.
Thank you, Peter. Dario Lomax.
Yes, you Tree Slade. Thank you for inviting me to participate in this way we have of remembering someone who made a very important difference in who we are, holding us to a very high standard, and someone who we were able to fight with and to share good times with, share delicious food with. I was very glad to be able to see Samori yesterday, to talk with him for a little while, to barge into his office the moment when he's writing his material for his Behind the News program, and him issue up some patience. And I don't know where it came from, but he had that extra bit. And we had talked earlier in the day about flying, and he asked me if I like to fly. I told him just how much I actually do, that I love the sensation of taking up off the ground and being in the clouds and reaching that plateau and leveling off and going to some place rather special. And I wanted to know where it was he was going to send me. He's sending me to San Francisco. We're going to Bermuda, where he has comrades, and or Trinidad. And indeed, it was simply to a little Trinidadian cook to get him some codfish cakes and some sorrel downstairs. So he treated me. I got some for him.
You buy, I fly. Right? I buy, you fly.
That's right. And so that was a very nice exchange in way of capturing a little part of someone so brilliant, so committed, with a good sense of humor, taste for good food, love good music, too. That's our brother. We have to keep him in our heart.
Thank you. Dred Scott Keys.
Well, I mean,
everybody here is just in tears.
It's just sad, I mean, in a way. But I agree with Al that we have to keep up the good fight in lieu of Samori, but we have to just have people take his place in a way. We have to, not just one person, but we as a station have to continue the work that Samori has been so passionate about. Three things actually. Samori was the consummate diplomat. He was very diplomatic because of the position that he was in, that he had to deal with so many different producers and so many different issues and so many different pieces of management that he had to assume the facade of a diplomat. And I think he handled that very well. But I do know that because of those various different areas, it put a lot of stress on him. And I don't want to go back to how a black man in America is stressed out already, but it's true. And he was definitely stressed, and I don't think the job helped him. I don't think many things helped him, but he was so passionate about his work that he continued to do it. Secondly, was his sense of humor. People think that because of Samori was the way he was. He was brought up in an English-oriented society, English being Great Britain, and he had that bearing about him. But he had a very keen sense of humor, and you know, to the point. I mean, I can't even explain jokes that he did, but just that his observations about human nature. When he would make these observations, really would just hit something within all of us when he would be describing these nuances that we would all crack up because they were so obvious, but he would make it much livelier. Thirdly was his musical taste. And although I can't lay claim to his musical taste, he had some of the most exquisite musical tastes in the world, from jazz. I mean, just well-rounded as far as his music was concerned. He liked music. Good music was good music to him, no matter where it came from. He really respected the music and culture of other people, and which I respected very much that he did. And he loved somebody very near and dear to my heart, which I want to dedicate a poem to him by Linton Kwesi Johnson, which was his favorite poet. And he was just a connoisseur of music, of culture. He knew exactly what he liked and what he didn't like. And that's what gave him an edge. And I love Samori. I got to say that, even though we argue now, and I think that's one of the things that Samori knew about me, that I was hot-headed, and that he would just let me go off, and then he knew that one of the things he knew about me was that I don't keep grudges, you know, and so he would let me just go off, and then, you know, he'd come back later and we'd talk about it. But that's the wisdom that Samori had. And when I heard Rosemary Mealy called me this morning, I was just floored with the news, and I just could not even function after that. Even though I had to go to the dentist and all of that, I just couldn't. It was one of the last things on my mind, and I'm just so. It's a dark day here at WBAI. But again, I want to go back to Thoreau and Al, and you know how we have to continue to struggle. Now, are you going to play the piece of music now, or are you going to play? Play it later.
We have played at the appropriate time.
Okay. All right.
But I will make sure that it is said, because actually the music being played today is the sum total of everybody's selections. Everybody gave me something special to play.
Because that's what he liked.
Uh-huh. So we play, and I'll let everybody know that. that that, in fact, is what the case is.
Well, Samori will miss you terribly, and I don't expect anybody to fill the vacuum that you've left, but we'll be there, and we want folks to know, and your family, that we'll be there.
Thank you. Well, Bernard White, I was afraid to call on you because I know you're not in good shape today. But you'll manage.
Okay. You know, I've known Samori for many years, about 20 years now. And I recognize that I am who I am. You know, I've tried to leave here several times today, so I could avoid coming to the microphone, but I haven't been able to leave the building. That I am who I am
It is with great difficulty that those of us who knew Samori, whether it was for 3 years, 2 years, 15, or 20, the impact that he made upon us, at least I can speak for myself and my wife, was not as a program director, but as a human being who happened to have been the program director at WBAI. As they say uptown, Al Lewis has been around the block quite a few times. You don't run into people like Samori very often. He, all the times that I spoke to him about ideas that he had, I had, just conversations, complaints, to me he never expressed, I hope I make myself understood, kind of me ego. He was so deeply involved with the station, the purpose, the agenda of the station, and the people who worked at the station, that it seemed to me I've been a performer for practically all my life. And I've worked in big studios, in small studios. And there are people who run the show there. Radio stations. I did 18 years of radio. Big time radio. Couldn't get any bigger than Orson Welles' Mercury Theater. And he always ran into the me ego. And I got a pretty good antennae. Never detected that. From Mr. Marksman. And I thank you for that. That made it a lot easier. Although, I can handle the others. I've had to. Radio stations, TV stations, movie studios. Yeah. He was my mother, who'd been dead many, many years, if she knew Samori, my mother would say in her European peasant way, he was such a wonderful man, but he just didn't have the years in him. I remember my mother saying that so many times.
He was a man.
But I had.
That's what he was.
But let's be joining us now is someone who knew Somori very well and also joins us in our grief, is Gil Noble from WABC-TV. Hi, Gil.
Hi, Trace.
How are you doing?
Not well at all. A major limb has been amputated, you know. It's just not going to be able, we're not going to be able to function as we did when he was among us. It's a grievous loss. And I feel severely diminished by his departure. It's not fair. He's too young. While I'm grateful that we had him at all, it's just not fair that he be taken from us at this time. At this hour of such great need, it just does not seem fair. On a very pragmatic level, you know, there are very few African Americans who have ultimate say over any broadcast programs, much less programming of the entire radio station. And he really held that position. He held sway over the editorial content of the station. That's an enormously important role. That's not duplicated. He is just an extraordinary man who stepped up to that responsibility with such conviction, with such honesty, And at such personal sacrifice, no matter when you turned on WBAI, you're likely to hear him sitting in for somebody in the morning, in the wee hours of the night, doing his program. He was all over the dial. He was totally selfless. Whenever he called me, it was always to do something that would enhance programming, enhance the awareness of listeners. So many of the people who are now regulars on the program would not be regulars were it not for he. And the stress that he was under to hold to his convictions, that's something that we should really look to. An extraordinary sacrifice he made. He could have bent and had more tepid programming, as I like to say, more decaffeinated programming. But he chose to give the listeners a sort of a balance and another way of looking at the issues of the world that even those of us who are in journalism benefited by. I would listen to that program. I must tell you that I always wondered about that theme music in the beginning, with that those violins going like crazy. But getting past that, I would always tease about that. But getting into the scope of the program, the interviews that he did, which were not just local, not just national, but they were global, and the way he conducted those interviews, were first rate. The assortment of guests that he put on that program, I don't know, the phone bill that the radio station has must be monstrous, thanks to his industry and seeking out the far-flung nations of the world where there was trouble and unrest. He was an extraordinary man. He was extraordinarily well-prepared. I never heard him do an interview that he had not clearly, obviously, done his homework on. And he was talking with people who were shaking and moving this world. And he was able to converse with them and challenge them on a first-rate level, and that's something that I've had to struggle with doing, and so I know how difficult it is. On top of that, he was a warm person. He was a nice guy. He was devoid of any ego. I was listening to what was said just before I started talking, and he was just, he was not a me person. He was us. He was about us. He genuinely cared about what was going down. He was not just, you know, putting on a performance, and then when he was off the air, he was different. He was like this through and through, round the clock, off the record. He was the same as he was on air. I fear for us. The only hope is that maybe those of us who survive him can struggle even more to live up to the fine example that he left us. He really gave his all. He gave more than he should have. We all knew that, those of us who were reasonably close to him. We knew it. And there was a long, long-standing concern that he was doing too much. But he was a driven person. And that's something that most of us might well think about, because the crises of these times really merit that kind of attitude, being driven, being committed. All the things that were said in the fundraising campaigns that the station would have about commitment and dedication to give nourishment of information to people. That wasn't just being verbose. This is really what WBAI was about. And to a large degree, it was all made possible because of this extraordinary man. I pray that the station can continue in that fine level of excellence that he brought the station up to. I really hope so. And I also hope that young journalists will learn about this man. Like it is, we'll cover the funeral if there is one, and if it is proper for us to do so, we will be there. And we are doing something in tribute to him this coming Sunday. And I'm not saying this in the way of trying to promote our program, but just to let you know how deeply we respect this man. He was a mountain of a man, a truly, truly great professional.
Thank you very much, Gil. Thank you so much for your words today. And now for that dedication by Linton Kwesi Johnson, the Dred Scott Keys referred to, and we'll come back right after that.
The wind on my face would be healed by the world. the seed of an hour. If the roots that spread out in the swamp ran too deep for the issuing flower, I was wondering if I could find myself all that I am in all I could be. If all the population of stars would be less than the things I could utter, and the challenge of space in my soul be filled by the shape I become.
Listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Yatrice Lead, and today is really not talkback day. Today is a day of mourning here at WBAI. Our beloved program director and leader and comrade and friend, Samori Marksman, has died, and we are remembering him and the way he touched each of our lives. I'd like to ask our own in-house movie critic, Paul Wonder to say a few words. It's been very hard on everyone, and on you, Paul, I know, but I know there are things you want to say.
He could never understand the word can't. Paul, I need some tape. You can't have it, Samori. We don't have any. But somehow I would find it. This weekend, Friday, he said, find him a movie for his family to go to. When I found him the screening of a Disney film called something or other's first movie. I don't remember the name. It's opening Friday. And he brought his family to it. And he yelled at me Monday because it was such an atrocity.
But continue, Paul.
It was already said that he is the glue that kept the station together. And when there was no studio time, and when there was no tape, as Captain Picard would say, we would make it so. A little while ago, David Kenny, one of our producers, came up to me and said that he had booked time in one of our studios, and there was somebody in there. And I looked at the booking sheet, and sure enough, and Samori did this all the time, he had had an important interview that needed to take place at the same time that David Kenny did. And there was no resolution, so he just booked the time simultaneously with David Kenny and left me to sort it out. He wouldn't understand the word can't, and it did get sorted out, so I guess he was right. And I was always pissed off at him when he did that, and now I'll miss it.
Thank you, Paul. Everybody's kind of hit right in the belly today. Sharon Hopper.
This is really a hard day, but one of the things that I thought about this morning as I prepared to come in was an analysis that I was having trouble sorting out, the world's oil situation. And I was saying, when I get to work, I'll talk about it in some more oil. Help me, you know. He was, to me, among other things, because he was my friend, become a really close friend. One of the nice things about coming to WBAI is I tell people, I never know how I came to this place, because it seems like a group of people reached out and just somehow embraced me. It was, you know, as much people coming toward me as my trying to reach out for the station, and Samori kind of took me in. You know, there was never any real ceremony or stuff, and I learned a lot of things from him. He was by far one of the most intelligent people I've ever met in my life, and that was coupled with an extreme kindness and a patience for somebody like me who's abrupt sometimes, and who, you know, wants to get things done and get them over with. And he's very thorough. He's always so very thorough in how he does things. And I think that I've learned a lot of what I know from him. I guess a part of me feels that I have not known him nearly enough. He's somebody that I always would have imagined being, you know, part of my life for its totality. And I feel such an extreme loss, you know, by his not being here. You know, but in a lot of people see Samori, I think those who don't know him as purely an intellectual, which is how I have seen him, you know, for years before I came to the station. like the first time I saw Samora, he was lecturing on Mozambique. This was some 15 or 16 years ago. And then to come here and find out what a tremendous sense of humor he had. You know, he loved to laugh and he loved to make other people laugh. And he loved to tell jokes and he appreciated other people's jokes as well. So I feel like, you know, a part of me has gone today, as I'm sure the rest of my colleagues do as well. I'm sure.
Amy Goodman has been all but inconsolable. Amy Goodman of Democracy Now. Your thoughts today?
And wake up call. I was just thinking about something Matthew Finch said this morning, a poem or a song that he remembered when somebody died, and he said it felt like a whole library had burnt down. And that really, really makes me think about Samori, and it's not just intellectual because books are so deep with soul and heart, and so is Samori. He was a major mentor in my life. I was thinking today about the fact that here he is, the program director of WBAI, and I guess that's a role that's an administrator's role, and how amazing he was and how incredibly lucky we were to have him in that role, because he was the last, administrating was really the last thing that I think of Samori doing, and yet that in no way is to take away from the structure that he brought to this place through his intellect, through his warmth, through his compassion, and his devotion to learning and education. And that really is what a program director should be and what the finest administrator can be, someone who can bring us together and remind us of things that we may have forgotten and be there holding us together and supporting us. When it came to Africa, Samori and Alambe are really my major mentors. I can't even refer to Samori in the past tense yet. I just can't. Just listening to him as Jeremy and Errol and Robert are putting together a Pacifica news piece about Samori, I was listening to his voice. He's just in the next room. And I was thinking about a couple weeks ago when I can't remember what I needed during Democracy Now!, flailing my arms and running down the hall, and I said, Maria, ask Samori. She went and said, no, he's not in his office. No, he has to be in his office. And that's just, has to be there. And so I went running down the hall as I think Errol played some music, and there he was. There he was. There was my rock, our rock. That's what Samori is at this station. He holds us all together. He was the person when I was in Washington I could call, and I loved to hear him laugh. He enjoyed my jokes.
Yeah.
But to hear him laugh was the greatest gift in a day, and he was very ready to laugh at a lot of things, despite what many people might feel. But it's his intelligence that he graced us with here. I don't know how to describe it. Just this morning, talking about going into his office and sitting down, you're never going to have just a scheduling meeting or anything like that, even if you were going to sit down and talk about the marathon. To talk to Samori was to talk about life, to talk about the world, to talk about history, to talk about the future, really to listen to Samori. That's what I like to do. I gained so, so much from Samori. And I was thinking back to October when my dad died and being at the funeral and looking up, and there was Samori. And the space he will leave is huge, and nobody can fill it. He is a unique, wonderful man. I love him very much, and he's not part of my past yet.
Thank you. Here is a person who is very special as well. in Samori's life. They've known each other for 20-odd years. He also happens to be the chairman of the journalism department of Long Island University, where Samori taught a course and in journalism. He also is a former chair of our local board. Ralph Engelman joins us now. Thank you, Ralph.
Well, I certainly can't say it's good to be here. I'm shattered by the news, and having seen Samori recently, he seems so well and so vital, it's unimaginable. I think many people are not aware of his activities outside the station, and one of them that was very important to me and to us here at LIU is the fact that for 6 years he taught here. He taught every year a course on mass media minorities. It was a brilliant course, and would usually meet on Saturday mornings. He brought the world to his class, as he did to his programs. I mean, he'd bring activists, world leaders, journalists. He was a taskmaster as a professor, but the students revered him, and their lives were very much affected by him. I know he had you to the class, if I'm not mistaken, and bring the students to Gil Noble. It's a tremendous loss. Also, you know, his contacts and his credibility in the progressive community of this city and this country and the world were an unbelievable resource, certainly for the station, but also, you know, for us. You know, you mention his name at the UN, or when I'm trying to get internships for my students or speakers to come here. His name was golden and opened so many doors. And you know, it's an incredible loss. Of course, he was a great organizer too. I agree with Amy. Program director hardly, you know, does justice to, you know, what he did and for the station. I mean, his organization of the Paul Robeson Memorial was something I'll never forget as long as I live, that incredible day. Now, he was going to be instrumental in organizing the commemoration of Pacifica's 50th anniversary. It's almost inconceivable how we're going to have to somehow marshal ourselves to go on with that work, but not having him there is really rough. He, you know, he was very interested in Pacifica's history. He had so many interests. You know, I was talking about his teaching. I'm just looking at my desk here, the notes that I took when he first came to LIU about 6 years ago, and just his teaching experience. Here in the United States, he taught at the College of New Rochelle. He taught at the New School at Ramapo. But he also taught overseas in Africa. He taught at Fora Bay College in Sierra Leone. He taught at the College of West Indies in Monrovia, Liberia. He published a magazine, Peruvian Perspectives. He contributed to Africa Magazine. It goes on and on. So that in addition to the yeoman's work that he did at Pacifica, there was this whole world out there of other activities that he did, which were obviously related to what he did at Pacifica. You know, I want to say just a word about his politics. I guess the way I would describe his politics as a person and as a programmer, it was the popular front. I mean, in the sense that yes, there are divisions, you know, within the left, within the black community, within Pacifica, and I mean, he aimed to air those differences. Those differences and those debates are so important. I think one of the important functions of BAI and Pacifica stations is to air those debates. The notion that there's a sort of a party line, that the Pacifica is monolithic, or that Samori was ideologically rigid or nonsense, it was quite to the contrary. And I think this was an important characteristic of what he brought, you know, to the station and how he sort of enriched the whole Pacifica tradition that way. And, you know, Pacifica, I guess, to a certain extent, always was, and its stations at BAI will always be a house divided. There are differences, you know, and often these differences are differences of principle. And everyone in the BAI extended family of people who work at the station and listen know about that. But it seems to me what Tsumori represented and, you know, what his death, I mean, says to me is, you know, what I know he deeply believed, and that is that our city, our what we have in common is really more important than our differences. And I think we've really got to keep that in mind as we continue to struggle without him.
Thank you very much, Ralph Engelman.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from our own artist in residence, Janet Coleman.
Yes, Eutrice, I came over because I really wanted to see the view from Samori's office while he, I'm sure he'll forgive my saying, while his spirit was still in the room. Maybe he wouldn't forgive me for that. Because I wanted to see the view that he relished so much, which was overseeing the land of the People's Republic of Brooklyn and how much pleasure he took in being able to see the people that he was reaching, see the view. And this is a very, very great shock. This is a man of enormous grace and culture and humor. What a funny, funny, witty man he was. He played on Poison Darts. They want to put that in. And he enjoyed his role as the mogul of called R.H. Moxie. And he took great relish in playing this capitalist pig. And he did it to a fairly well. He was an utterly charming man.
Go ahead, Jenna. I know you're...
I just wanted to be with my colleagues today so we could piece together some of, you know, what this heritage was that Samori left us, because I think it was, I mean, he took a great deal of pleasure in dialectics, and it is left to us to complete all the antitheses that he was able to perceive. So I know we have a lot of work to do to carry on, but I think we've all been enriched by his brilliance and his thoughts that he laid on us without being able to help it. He couldn't stop thinking.
I'm just so glad you came.
Me too.
I'm glad that you're here.
Me too.
The publisher of Carib News is joining us now. Samori meant a great deal to him. His name is Carl Rodney, and he joined us now. Thank you, Carl, for being with us.
It's so sad to be joining the BI family at this time. Samori and I go back quite a while, from in the 1970s when Samori was a big fan of Michael Manley and what was happening in Jamaica. At that time, I was president of the Jamaica Progressive League, and we had a number of wonderful debates and issues around what was happening at that time. And we would like to claim him as a Caribbean man, because he's from St. Vincent and his interest was so well known throughout the Caribbean, but he's a man of the world, because his interest in Africa and interest in the Middle East and all around rung them out in such a way that you have very few people with that wide background, and we really lost a giant in the field of communication, really. And he's such a caring person, you know. We really have lost a great one, and he was passionate about the issues. I remember him so very well in those days of what was called democratic socialism, and his understanding and the sense of that in the 70s. He was, even back then, you know, very, very firm in his belief and his commitment to what he saw as a progressive form of life. And so we're going to miss him. I mean, we're going to really miss him.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for those words.
Oh, I wish it could be more, and certainly to his wife and family, the thanks and sympathy of our community here is the least we can do, and certainly want to be helpful in any form or fashion that is devised to carry his memory, that we want to be actively involved with that.
Thank you very much. We come back to our BAI family, and I hope, Bernard, you're okay now.
Well, you know,
to continue.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You get these waves that you go through, you know, and you caught me at a moment where I was I guess as a wave was going through a crescendo period. But you know, Samori and I were very close. We talked all the time. He would call me at any time. We were talking about earlier, just so many pieces spring out at you about his sense of humor and how he would make up words, and some of which I can't say.
Many of which.
But I was just thinking, you know, when Daya was talking about you, he told her yesterday afternoon, "You fly, I'll buy," to go get something to eat. I know in the morning, when we would come in after the show, he would say, because he used to say, "Well, let's get some crumpets." Mm-hmm. And then after a while, he dropped the crumpets and he said, "Well, let's get crumpetized." But he was always doing that kind of thing, taking little things that were, you know, he could take a low-level thing and elevate it to mm-hmm. something that was respectable. And what I was saying, going to say before is that I recognize very clearly that I am who I am because of my relationship with Samori, that I had been going around looking at radio stations in the late 70s and 80s, and, you know, people didn't want to give you a chance because you didn't sound a certain way, you didn't look a certain way, you didn't know some, you know, individuals. So another brother who was here, who has passed, Kofi Pendergrass, I knew Kofi, and I said, "Hey, man," I was unemployed then, too. I said, "I think I'm ready to come down to BAI." He said, "Well, you contact his brother, Samori Marksman, and let him know what you want to do, and he'll hook you up." So I called Samori, and I said, I had a whole speech, and I just ran it. "My name is Bernard White, and I've been wanting to do radio for a very long time. I'm very interested. I'll do anything I want, especially want to work at news, da-da-da-da." And he didn't say anything. He said, "Well, call this number, ask for Robert Knight, and tell him that you're coming in." So I did that. And once I got here, what I began to realize that I was just in awe of what he knew, how much he knew, on a variety of different subjects. And at that time, he had one of those steel trap memories. He could hear a phone number one time, and that was it. I mean, and it could be an international phone number with 100 digits to it, and he would remember it. Whenever you couldn't find some information, you could always call Samori, and he would either tell you who you could go to get information, or he'd give you some insight on just what it was. And I remained in awe of him through the whole time that I knew Samori. Because I was always shocked that he knew something about that, too. And he gave, you know, he provided experiences for all of us here, because he would take us on these trips. He took many of the people down from here to Grenada. And I remember it was, going into Grenada, meeting Maurice Bishop, meeting the members of the New Deal movement. And he conveyed to us how important it was that this was an example of what we could do. And, you know, so It was not just to go have sex, sand, and sun. It was an object lesson for us that if we could organize ourselves to gain whatever power we could, that we could effectively run countries. And we're all going to miss Samori in a lot of different ways. This is a jewel here, like the New Jewel movement was in Grenada. This is a jewel, and there will be jewel thieves who will come around and try and steal this jewel. And as Grandpa said, you know, we have to come together to make sure that that does not happen. So we're all going to miss it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bernard. Our news director, Jose Santiago.
Boy, this is difficult. Samori and I talked a few weeks ago about the trip that we thought he would be coming on with us, those who went to the National Federation of Community Broadcasters conference that was taking place last weekend in San Francisco. And we had been there once before with Samori and had the rare opportunity that we never get enough of here with each other. We're such a close family, we don't have as too many opportunities to spend time outside of the station together. And when it happens, this always seems to be such a wonderful thing. And we were in San Francisco 2 or 3 years ago for a conference, and we were driving around, and he always wanted to eat well, and some of us wanted to eat cheap. But he won out, so we ate well. And we were in the car one morning, and some of us wanted to go see the redwoods, see the redwood trees. Bernard was there, and others. And Samori wanted to go to Alcatraz. You know, he wanted to go to Alcatraz, and
for the marathon.
and in a sense he was working in a sense, because you know, for some of us, oh gee, who wants to go there? That's depressing. But for him, it was, how could you not want to go there? There's so much history there, and you know, people talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal, the voice of the voiceless, and so many other journalists who have been credited with really speaking for the disenfranchised, for the forgotten, for the poor. We saw Juan Gonzalez of the Daily News get an award just recently, and we know about Herbert's pieces in the Times and others that we're familiar with. But Samori was very, very much a voice of the voiceless on an international scale. And he was just extraordinary that way. I was just looking into his office and looking at all the bookshelves and remembering how when we moved here back in June and everyone was struggling to get their offices together and looking for a place to work and a phone that worked and that sort of thing. Samori was obsessed with getting his shelves up. He needed his books, you know, because that's where he was comfortable and that's what he needed. And we all always understood that about him and just really respect him so much for his pursuit of knowledge, his great intellect. And I was just looking around his room and saw just some of the evidences of who he was, the calendar that he always kept on this music stand. And I remember one time for several months it kept wobbling around, and finally I went in one day and took all the stuff off and took it in news and got a screwdriver and tightened it up and fixed it and took it back to him. And it was straight for a while. And just looking on the wall where a lot of people would have a map of the United States of America, he has a map of the Native American tribes of the United States. Really, that's what he was, just an extraordinary man. I missed him tremendously on the trip to San Francisco. It wasn't the same because I was looking forward to making the concession and saying, okay, let's go to Alcatraz. let's go check it out some more. And I'm a better journalist for having known him, and I'm a better man for having experienced him. He's just an extraordinary man.
Thank you. Patrika Dallas. Maybe you want to say a couple of words. Patrika worked very closely with Samori Marksman and was well known to his family. She also produced a program here, a women's program, but mostly worked in quiet ways and sometimes unseen ways to get things done, and was the unofficial secretary. Well, actually, kind of official, unofficial secretary of Samori Marksman. Patrika.
Wow. I think he's only sleeping. Not dead, just sleeping. My experiences here at the station is one thing, and with Samori it's another. It's the brightest individual that I've ever met at Caribbean African American, you call it what you will. I mean, the man has knowledge up to his head. You know, I never knew anything about, maybe ashamed to say, about what the hell is left, you know, left wing and the whole progressive movement. It wasn't a part of what I knew when I came to WBAI. I came here, joined the news team in the newsroom as a journalist, but then realized that the format here and everything was different, because it was mainly, you were dealing with progressive type of information, alternative news, if you will. And I learned a lot there in the newsroom, but when I came out to, and I said out to public affairs, because it seemed so different and so far apart from each other. I remembered when Samori called me up one afternoon and he said, Patrika, and I didn't even know him that well. I used to mix him up with Bernard. He says, Patrika, I want you to coordinate some forums for me. And I don't know why he chose me, but he had a way of just looking at people, talking to them, and just identify people and know, give you challenges, know if you, you know, can do it or whatever. And he asked me to coordinate these forums for him at House of the Lord. You remember those mm-hmm. forums, Miss Lee? That's when we met.
Yes.
And here I was. He was giving me numbers of to call up people some I never heard of before. Shamefully, I should have known of these people, never knew of them. Utrecht Lead was one of them. You call up people and you book them and you tell them, you know, this forum is about XYZ or whatever it is. And they'd come out, and then I'd go there and make sure that things are set up and are done properly. Never done anything like this in my life before. I never knew I could do it. I never knew I would do it on the political sense of things. And my God, I learned so much. I learned so much. I was just being educated, right? This was my university. Those forums were my university. And then again, when you're hearing these same voices on the airwaves bringing in mega dollars for WBAI. And then we did another big forum with Michael Parenti and Tony Benn, And the man put me in charge of that and say, you put it together. This is what I want, and you put it together. And then he'd come to you and he'd say, okay, Patrika, what have we got? Report. Yeah? And you tell him what's going on. And you do it. And I felt so good about myself, because here I was in a different world altogether, knowing about real issues and real people. And we fought too, you know. Yes, we fought.
That's what I want to say about Samori. I want to tell about the only fight I ever had with Samori. I've been trying to think all day what I wanted to say about him.
Yes, we fought.
And I felt so bad. I had never had a fight with him. It's been about a year
Janice
ago.
Janice Bryant. Yes. Janice K. Bryant of the Wake Up Call. But you were in the middle of your...
Yes, we fought. Mm-hmm. We fought. I remember the first time he said to me, I don't want to hear it. And he put up both hands. Everybody remember this, you know, like maybe Jesus on the cross or something. I don't want to hear it. And then he'd walk, and I'd be so angry, and I would just go home and just write him a letter, because I'd be so angry with him. And since I can't stay to talk to him. But when you look back, you know, after that, you can't be angry with him, because you have to look back at what it was and then say, you know, he had his reasons for not wanting to. And you learn later on as time goes by. And then it was the same Samori again. He called me once and he said, you know, I've never done Behind the News before. I was doing those little programs here and there. And Samori was in Florida. And I got a call that I have to do Behind the News. And the program was this guy, Mohammed, whatever, in Jersey, had spoken out against some anti-Semitism or whatever it is. And Samori called and said that Patrika should do the program. And he had guests set up already for the program. I said, what the hell am I going to do this program? I never even know what was going on in that respect. However, Elombe came in and told me, you know, briefed me on what was going on. And I said, oh, if he thinks I can do it, then I can do it. And I went in and I did that program. And he's the sort of person who is going to tell you that you did well. Because he heard. Elombe came to me and said, you know, it was a damn good program you did there. I just went and did it just by air, you know. And I said to him after that, I said, Samori Marksman, don't you ever, ever call me at the last minute to do something like that again and put me on the spot. He said, you call yourself a journalist. You get my meaning?
Mm.
He will be missed. I will miss him terribly. A friend. There's nothing, hardly anything that Samori does here in terms of programming from the morning show right back that I don't know about. Because Samori would call me and make some of those calls. They'd call me and say, Patrika, I need somebody for so-and-so. Can you do whatever? Maybe it's for the morning show, maybe it's for whatever. I am behind the scenes doing stuff.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you, Patrika. Jabel Fai is a person who is familiar with Samori Marksman largely because his music stash would be raided by Samori Marksman and just about everybody else at the station. He's our acting public affairs director, and I know this has been for you the same as it has been for the rest of us, Jabel.
Yeah, I need to... It's difficult. It's very difficult. I need to personally, I guess, to take some time to be able to formulate my real thoughts about Samori. But I can say that I personally have lost a brother, a friend, and a commander, because he was my commander, you know, he was my general. He was. Now I have to meditate to get my orders, and that's my problem. He was my commander over here in New York City, and my mentor also. And I have to meditate a lot to get my orders, because I don't know where I'm going to go in New York City and what I'm doing.
Thank you, Jabel. Richard Arkellian is a very familiar face around here at WBAI. Without him, in many ways, things that are necessary would never get done. He is the greatest volunteer we have, really. The most enthusiastic, the most dedicated volunteer. And Richie, I just needed you to say a few words today.
Well, generally I try to avoid the spotlight, but I was brought up as a Baptist, and I've got a lot of righteous indignation in me, so I'm not crying now. But Samori Marksman was a giant of a man. He's comparable to one of the apostles. And although we never spoke about totally his religious beliefs, I would generally come in and try to get his attention once in a while if some tragedy happened, and I thought that I could explain it partially because of the evil that's in the governmental circles, city, state, and federal in this country. And basically, I thought that the more evil the country is, the more fear and more trouble they have because they're worshiping idols. And we're seeing the idol worshippers in this city, both in uniform and out of uniform, who don't repent, who'd rather spend their money on beer and pornographic movies and trips than putting a full-page ad in a newspaper and saying this department or that department has been breaking the law in various ways, using undue influence by putting magazines near windshields inside of cars so they wouldn't get parking tickets. And when people were shot in the back trying to explain that that person was facing them and telling lies, which as a Christian offended me, but I'm not only a left-wing Baptist, I'm a pro-Islamic Christian, and I have been addressing the people in much the same manner.
How has Samori touched your life?
He showed that being intellectual is not being a snob, as quite a few of the people who demonstrated that during the impeachment hearings. They were verbose. They used flowery language, but they were like the verse in the New Testament. They were hollow inside like drums. And Samori would allow me to get his lunch once in a while, or pick up some literature from the West 23rd Street Communist Party area. And, well, whatever I could do, I would do. And I never had a cross word from him, even though some of my jokes were corny, and two of them, they still continue to be corny. I repeat the same songs, but it keeps my esprit de corps going. And there were two primarily anecdotal stories I would talk about that had to do with him. One of them was when he would interview the United Kingdom parliamentarian Tony Benn. I mentioned to him one time, I said, look, we could get another 500,000 listeners if instead of Tony Benn, we could get Tony Bennett. And he would give me a cursory smile and then walk away. And then also, he would deal a lot with Di Lapiero, and one day I walked up to him. I said, hey, you know what my favorite sandwich is? And he said, no. He fell right for it. I said, the Di Lapiero sandwich. And then he would always mention the Dilip's last published book. And I would say to myself, this is one place to be, and I'll volunteer here as long as I keep breathing, no matter what happens. No matter what shape or mood I'm in, I'll come in to get out of bed just to frustrate the infidels. And that's the word I picked up by being pro-Islamic. There are a lot of infidels out there, and they have to be resisted in the best way you can in honor of WBAI. You can mock them. Don't ever make direct threats against them. And and remember the verses in both the Quran and the Bible. Death to the infidels. Allah will do that. And the wages of sin is death. God will do that. So you people who keep breathing and keep remembering WBAI and none of these personal trivial pettinesses that you have about a certain program. You don't like the program? Turn it off.
Thank you, Richie. Thanks a lot.